What the?
History. 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 History.
Hello and welcome to What the History.
Your bite-sized taste into the wonderful platter of history.
That works.
Yes.
That works.
Hello.
That was still quite new, so yeah, if you haven't heard What the History before, what we do is we try to find the stranger aspects of history and give you a little taste of some of the more interesting, mysterious, or just plain
crazy,
weird and crazy stuff that will make you say, What the History? I am your co-host, Trevor Holland, and I'm joined by my wonderful, wonderful
wife.
If you want to go that way, that's fine, yep.
Susie Holland.
And if you haven't heard us before, our pilot episode is also available. So if you haven't listened to that one, please download that one as well and have a listen. But it's okay, you don't need to listen to them in order. It doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, what the?
Yeah, indeed, what the history. So speaking of what the history, Susie, what do you have for us this time around?
Okay, well, I've got a quite an interesting one. It's the first in a series that I'm wanting to research for What the History podcast on cursed objects like gems or bits of furniture that may be cursed or just general stuff. And I really like this one. So I'm starting off this series by doing the alleged curse of the Hope Diamond. Now, I say alleged because it's never been proven, and it can be a lot of things that can be attributed to the said curse. It could be greed, or it could be just really bad luck, but I'm going to do it anyway. Okay, here we go. Now, like a lot of women, I like gems. Nice, big, chunky, gorgeous gems, and little ones don't do it for me. And as the saying goes, diamonds are a girl's best friend. But I've never really snuggled up into a diamond or talked and laughed with one, so yeah, I'm not really sure about that. Who doesn't like a juicy mystery associated with something so beautiful? A diamond in this story, icy and brilliantly faceted with a devastating past. Okay, so step this way. I would like to talk about the Hope Diamond because it's really got my interest. I've been interested in gems, like I said, for a very long time, and cursed gems have always got that bit of a mystery. Now, the Hope Diamond sits at the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. in the USA, and like a lot of so-called cursed stones, it was said to have been stolen from a Hindu statue in India, and it has a beautiful light blue violet colour. Its story starts with Jean-Baptiste Tavernier, who was a French traveller merchant. He bought the stone from India, uncut, where it was called the Tavernier Blue. And then he sold it to the French King Louis XIV in 1668, where it was cut and given the name the French Blue. In 1749, King Louis XV ordered for the diamond to be restyled by his court jeweller for a ceremonial piece of jewellery named the Order of the Golden Fleece. Now, in 1791, during the French Revolution, or at the start of the French Revolution, it became apparent that living in France was too dangerous for King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. They tried to escape, but to placate the government, they gave all the royal jewels to the government, and the diamond was stolen soon after. And other reports say the palace was ransacked in 1792, and that's when the stone was stolen. Now, King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette, as most people know, were beheaded during the French Revolution in 1793, and the stone was previously worn by a royal as well, by the name of Princess de Lamballe, and she was a really good friend of the Queen, reputed also to have been Marie Antoinette's lover. And she was also caught up, unfortunately, in the Reign of Terror and was torn apart and mutilated by the mob, and they mounted her head on a spike, which is what they also did with the royal couple. And then the stone resurfaced in England, where it was passed from person to person, and they all had their own reports, or the family had their reports, because some people actually died and it was attributed to the so-called curse. Some people by the name of Sabaya, she was a woman who was stabbed to death by her royal lover. There was a prince named Prince Ivan Kanatovsky, who was murdered by Russian revolutionists, and he bought the diamond from Jacques Collet, who in turn committed suicide. and the reputation of the diamond as cursed, the reputation grew quite large. The stone was passed around until it was bought by a family who gave the diamond its current name of Hope. It stayed with the family without much incident, except for the financial debt of several members, so I suppose that's a bit of an incident, until it was bought by Pierre Cartier in 1909, who then sold it to the mining heiress, Evelyn Walsh MacLean, in 1911. And she liked to throw lavish Find the Hope hide-and-seek parties. That would have been an interesting night. And at her mansion, and wore the stone on several occasions. There's several photos of her all over the net of wearing the diamond. She had it in her possession until her death in 1947. And it's said the alleged curse struck the MacLean family, with Evelyn's oldest son being killed in a car crash, her daughter dying of an overdose. The family fortune was lost. Her husband ran off with another woman, and Evelyn passed away in a sanitarium. Some reports say that she actually died of a brain aneurysm due to alcoholism. So, yeah, wasn't very nice for that family. And the diamond was sold as part of the estate to pay bills left behind by the MacLean family to Harry Winston Incorporated. And they were the luxury jewelers of New York City, who showed it for 10 years as part of their Court of Jewels exhibition and at charities and other exhibits. And on November 10th, 1958, the stone was donated to the Smithsonian National Museum of Natural History, where it attracts millions of visitors every year and has been shown without incident so far. The story continues. What the history indeed. Cursed beautiful stone song. Yeah, this stone's pretty big too. And it's surrounded by lots of other little diamonds, and the necklace itself, the neck chain, has got diamonds on it as well. So it's very, very, very heavily insured and very heavy. And, yeah, I don't think I'd like to wear it. I think I'd like to look at it. But, yeah, what the history. Indeed.
What the history. Yeah, I think it can stay at the Smithsonian.
Yeah.
The Smithsonian.
Yeah, I don't think I want it. No.
Yeah, that's fine. No, they can keep it. I'm not going to take any chances.
No, they can have it. Yeah, I don't want to risk it.
Well, from diamonds to warlords.
Oh, nice jump there.
Yeah, smooth segue. Absolutely. And I'd like to, this time, talk a little bit about Genghis Khan.
Our friend.
Yes. Who may have been a bit of an eco-warrior.
Oh, what the history? Pray tell.
What the history? Well, let me explain. For many years, there's been discussions of mankind's impact on the environment and the steadily increasing average global temperatures. But the impact of human civilization on the atmosphere has been occurring well before the mass burning of coal and fossil fuels. In a 2011 report by the Department of Global Ecology from the Carnegie Institution in Washington, USA, historical data was used to assess the impact of events where large numbers of people died. Things like the Black Death, the fall of the Ming Dynasty, and the conquest and colonization of the Americas were considered and found to have not had that much impact due to the relative short-term reduction of human population. Then they turned their attention to the century-and-a-half rule of the Mongols. A bit of background. In 1176, a 9-year-old Mongol named Temujin had his father, the clan leader, poisoned by the leaders of the Tartar clan, which ruled Mongolia at the time. As he was too young to take leadership of the clan, Temujin and his family fled to the most remote areas of the Mongolian steppes, surviving on roots and rodents. The tribe consisted of 7 people, and that included Temujin. When he was 16, his tribe was attacked and his wife was kidnapped, leaving him with a total of 5 men under his command. Certainly not enough to retaliate. So he joined with another tribe, attacked, and reclaimed his wife.
As you do.
From this coalition, Temujin quickly subjugated many other tribes and soon ruled Mongolia. He also changed his name and became known as Chinggis Khan, or as we know him today, Genghis. This is how a 16-year-old with an army of 5 men ended up building an empire ranging from the Pacific Ocean to the Danube River, approximately 22% of the Earth's surface. This wasn't accomplished by peaceful means, though. It is estimated that 40 million people were killed by Genghis Khan and his descendants. The Mongols were ruthless, devastating and destroying whole towns, and leaving vast tracts of land uninhabited for extended periods of time. This is quite a bit of farm and grazing land, untended for 100 years or more, allowing forests and natural growth to reclaim a sizable amount of land. It is estimated, through the combination of Genghis's depopulation campaign and the regrowth of the forests, that nearly 700 million tons of carbon was removed from the atmosphere, leading to measurable cooling in the average global temperature. For context, 700 million tons is approximately how much carbon is released into the atmosphere annually through the burning of fossil fuels today. Please note, though, the hosts of the What the History podcast do not condone this method for reducing the impact of global warming.
No, definitely not.
Absolutely.
We're peaceful people here.
Indeed, and we definitely say about this, What the History.
Oh, Genghis.
And that will do us for this episode of What the History. If you want to find out more about what we've talked about, all the references and links to sites are below. Again, please, if you haven't already, listen to our pilot episode. And if you would like to keep listening to us, you can subscribe to the What the History podcast through iTunes or your favorite podcast player. You can head to our homepage, www.wthpod.rufusproject.com. And if you want to get in touch with us, well, you can leave a comment below this very episode on the webpage. You can find us on Facebook by searching for What the History Podcast, or you can send us an email to wthpod@rufusproject.com, and we would love to hear from you.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Absolutely.
So we'll chat to you next time, and hopefully we can make you say, What the History.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.